Welcome to The Cherry Picker, the horror movie podcast where we like to kill people, but not really. I'm your host, Zach Cherry, and with me as always...
As long as there are witnesses, there is no money.
Eddie of Edward is Truth.
And today we're talking about Mute Witness, released September 15th, 1995. This is kind of a little lost movie of sorts.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's kind of receiving a renaissance at the moment because it is getting a 4K release. Mm-hmm. On Arrow, they're putting it out in June. But the only way that you've really been able to watch it for the longest time was like a DVD or VHS, because it never made it to Blu-ray. Yeah. But it is currently – actually, do you want to let us know where we can watch it?
Yeah, you can currently stream it off AMC Plus, a.k.a. Shudder, if you have an active subscription to either one of those. And yeah, also Prime, as per usual. may as well just do like a Shudder or AMC Plus subscription, because you'll have access to it and also to so many other horror titles. Well, just dive in, kids.
Yeah, I mean, I should like Shudder. There's a pretty good selection. Like I have, I don't have a year round subscription, but it just auto renews. And I do, you know, sometimes like to watch the like original documentaries that they have. Like there's a lot of good stuff on there, but you know, there's a lot of stuff on there too, but you know, I have a good time with it because it's just like, what other streaming services do have or just like really dedicated to just horror? Because I mean, there are some, but Shudder is probably the, you know, the upper echelon of that. But I did watch this last night on, because I have the DVD. I will buy the 4K when that comes out. But I watched on Shudder because I, as far as I know, that's like the 4K transfer
resolution.
Yeah, like it looked, it was the best I'd ever seen the movie at that point, because I've only ever had the DVD. But I saw this some time ago. I don't even remember when I first saw it, but this is the first time you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Cause either it was, cause I used to work in video stores. So I either saw it on the shelf, cause like the cover for it is like really, I mean, it's got the same, like sort of like the Scream cover of like Drew Barrymore's face or like Silence of the Lambs, but it's just like Mute Witness, and the mute is like stitching, like covering her mouth, and just like that looks gross and intense, and I want to watch that. So I either rented it on like on VHS back in the day, or I caught it on TV. I have no recollection of which or when, but I just always, like, the movie stuck with me. Like I always remembered the beginning, and the rest I kind of forget. But Cards on the Table, what do you think?
Okay, it fucking blew me away from the get-go. It just kind of hit the ground running, and I had to keep pausing, and I was like, I just need eventually to just sit and watch this movie, because I keep pausing it, and I feel like the pacing, like I'm not missing it, because I can obviously see it is it's the action is scored like music, like the inclines and the and the decrescendos and the roller coaster ride of it all. Like it just bobs and weaves and lifts and separates. No, not that, but you know what I'm saying?
I'd say like by the 30 minute point, like everything that proceeds or like not from the beginning, cause there's like setup, but it's all kind of taking place in real time, it seems, mostly. Mm. I mean, there's some, you know, iffy, like what's happening, how much time has passed, but it's the same location. And I think that probably for like a good 15 minutes, it is like, it's nonstop. It's very like high octane, suspenseful tension that's why, like, during that time, I would not take a break, because, you know, you don't want to lose that. Afterwards, you know, we'll get into it, but, I always feel like the the chase scene, because this whole movie is kind of like a big giant chase scene, just like spread from start to finish. And I do kind of, you know, see a little bit of Scream 2 in there.
There's a few things that I saw in here. We'll get to those as we discuss them. But Scream 2, absolutely, particularly the initial, it's not even a chase, but so much as an evasion. Like, I did think about Gail moving, you know, around the walls of that recording studio.
Yeah. But even like the hallway, it's just like very similar. Yeah. And like, just like going from door to door, just like, it's almost like blocked in almost the same way of just like where she's coming from and where she's being chased.
And barely missing, like, being seen. And to the point where you're watching the movie going,
And she doesn't have, like, the dark hair with the red streaks, but she's got, like, a similar kind of bob.
I guess. Yeah. Her hair's shorter.
I didn't notice that. I know. I'm glad you enjoyed it, because There's quite a bit to unpack with this, but before we, you know, get to a premise and all that, I do want to thank some of our Patreon supporters. So if you have been listening to the podcast and you love the podcast or you like it just a little bit, we appreciate any sort of support that you offer us if you want to show us your love. So you can head over to patreon.com/ZachCherry, ZACKCHERRY. That's me, of course. And, you know, any tier will get you early access to all of our episodes. If you are at the Freddy Krueger tier, you get access to the Cherry Picker After Dark, which is the bonus episode we do every month. This month we are doing Final Girls Survivor 2, or however we're calling it. I forget the title, but we had a blast doing the first one, and we've obviously done Scream Survivor in the past, three seasons of that. So we're going to take 18 brand new Final Girls of movies that we've already covered in this, what are we at, like 105 episodes now. And we're going to put them on an island, and we're going to let them fight for the $1 million prize.
Is it $1 million this time? Is that what they're going to be
fighting
for?
Technically it's always that's what it is with the, the U.S. Survivor. But
when Wes Craven grants them the...
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Wes Craven is always the host. That's the rule.
Yeah. Even though we kind of lose sight of that. We're kind of the host, you know. But
Right. Yeah.
No, I get it. Yeah. So if you want something very niche and absurd, but also really fun, you know, head over there. And Freddy Krueger's here gets you access to that. There's lots of other fun things on my Patreon. But I do want to specifically shout out my top tier supporters. So for the Michael Myers supporters, give it up for Kyle Beard, Sam Levy, Khalil Young, Brady James, Ali Hamouche, Shane Allingham, Tim McKay, Stephanie Starbright, Horror Slut 95, Iggy Zanetta, Sean Flanagan, Josh Carr, Michael Boswell, and Brandy BB, as well as our Ghostface supporters, Eric Champney, Daniel Saturn, Tamika Jones, and Garrison Nichols. Thank you very much to our Michaels and Ghostfaces and every other tier that was not mentioned. You guys are making this happen week in, week out, and we greatly appreciate you for that.
We do.
And we also appreciate Boy Cried Wolf, who is our editor. So thank you very much to Boy Cried Wolf for putting up with us.
Yeah.
Do you have a premise for us, Edward?
Yeah, I got one. All right. Should it be Russian?
Yeah, if you can pull it off.
Okay, let's see. We'll see. Yeah. A speechless makeup artist working on a slasher movie shoot in Moscow finds herself locked in the studio after hours, where a brutal murder occurs before her eyes. She must escape capture now that she's a mute witness.
Huh? In Soviet Russia, witness mute you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay the hell away from Derek Zoolander. I think that's what I'm pulling for is our girl, yeah. our Resident Evil heroine from yeah. the Zoolander.
My favorite, like, bad joke. Like, do you remember the old Adam West Batman series? Like, did you ever watch
yeah,
that?
Of course.
I think it's the yeah. movie that came out. I think it was between season two or three or whatever. But there's
Season one and two. It was between one and two.
Okay. You know, yeah, there's a riddle, and it's just like people who are like from the Riddler, like what people are always in a hurry? Russians.
Yes. I thought that was so clever when I was a kid, yeah. when I'd watch that show, all those riddles and all the ways that they solved them. I thought, that's detective work. And I watch it now and it is pure camp. I'm like, that is ridiculous. Yeah. I can't believe I ever.
Like, how do you get from one point to the next? Anyway, mute witness. Did you know that this was actually originally set in Chicago? Like, I guess that the story was supposed to take place in Chicago, and then, the writer, director, producer, Anthony Waller, realized that it would be cheaper if they did shoot it in Moscow. So, which is interesting because, like, when I watch this, I feel like a lot of it was kind of made up on the fly. That's the sense that I get. Like, there's ideas and things that were there, but it was just sort of, you know, a lot of it came together by chance or just like whatever was going on. Like, it's just like a movie out of convenience or just like plot threads out of convenience to get from point A to point B. Because by the end of the movie, none of it really is cohesively linked to anything. Like, it just feels like a big disjointed mess.
Well, for me, I'd say more along the lines of, that's so funny. I mean, I can't imagine it taking place anywhere in the United States, because one thing, aside from the Scream 2 of it all, that I got from it was a kind of giallo feel,
mm-hmm.
and specifically like Dario Argento, just in terms of, number one, the randomness, and number two, kind of the imagery, particularly whenever Billy is having flashbacks of what she witnessed. The murder of the sex worker, that woman. And yeah. Especially when she's in the tub, like, I was like, this feels very Argento, even down to the woman's face in the bathroom window, kind yeah. of like screaming at her. And I was like, this is amazing. But, even in the kind of like crime solving, like, I'm a cop, but I'm kind of like a rogue cop, and I'm going to take this civilian and I need her in order to kind of like solve the case. And I'm also going to go about all this unorthodox kind of like, these methods of, you know, trying to win the day. And you're never going to know what's what. The fact that it also kept me guessing in that way felt all wonderfully, kind of gloriously European. And
yeah.
and so to imagine it as like a strictly American story, I feel like it almost might have lost something. I feel like maybe it's also just the fact that it's happening like on another continent with people speaking a different language. Something about the translation of it all, like
the language barrier.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. The fact that Billy isn't the only character who needs, needs a translator around to try and keep the lines of communication open. Everyone on that set, really, at one point or another, if they want to communicate effectively, they either have to be bilingual or multilingual,
yeah.
or they have to have somebody on hand to translate, and yeah. you have to trust that person.
I mean, I could imagine just being there. Like, you know, forget the horror of what's going on. Just, like, being in Russia would be terrifying to me. because
I mean,
of that,
Russia.
I just, like, I don't know. What's that?
I've been in Russia before.
You've been in Russia? How was it?
I was 14 years old, and I went on a trip to do the musical Grease in a cultural exchange children's theater program,
yeah.
where basically half the cast were young American kids and the other half were young Russian kids. And we went out there and did a number of performances with them in Mokva. And then we took them out here and did a number of performances all over California and performed in Northern California, Southern California. It was fun. And really, really sweet kids. Like, it was great. But it was very different. Like, there was shell shock. I was very happy that there was, like, kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel, because we only spent about 2 weeks with all the travel of it and everything like that. Yeah. And if I had to spend more time there, or be, like, on a film shoot as an adult and not have adults constantly kind of ushering me where I need to go.
Yeah.
Like, I felt the anxiety of just kind of, like, being in a place where well, – and then to not be able to speak on top of all that.
Yeah, because there's already an anxiety when you're in an unfamiliar territory.
Absolutely.
And something like that.
Absolutely.
And there's just something so intimidating about, like, Russia that I'd just be like, okay, this is already a terrifying experience. Because I was in I traveled to India. And a lot of people do speak English there. More so, I think it was like in the South, which is where I started my trip. So I was just sort of like became very acclimated to, you know, like having conversations with, you know, just like everything was, you know, understood and you could talk to people. But the more north you get, the less people know English. And that became very challenging. There was a, because I took a bus for about 20 hours or something, and it's stiflingly hot. Like, people in India, like what we would consider to be like balmy hot weather, that's where they might be wearing parkas and just like really bundled up. So I'm just like spitz in like crazy on this bus, and I open a window because I'm like, can we get a breeze in here? And everyone started yelling at me. No one spoke English, and they're just like, close the window, you know, just like, are you not dying right now? And so,
oh my God.
You know, I could imagine just like, you know, anywhere that is not your native land is going to be difficult if you don't speak the language and there are not people there who
can
speak your language. So on top of that, you like, because that's one layer of it. You've got the whole thing that she has witnessed something, but then she's mute as well. So it's just like there's like a language barrier on top of a language barrier. The actress who plays her, she's phenomenal, by the way. Marina Zudina.
Cool.
Who I get, like, she is Russian. She's Billy Hughes, the character, is American. But that was sort of like, I guess, the benefit of casting locally, because she doesn't speak, so there's, you know, they could just pass her off as American. So she actually, I mean, I don't know if she understands English now, but according to the trivia on IMDb, she did not speak English then. And if you look at her film credits, like, everything is just like Russian productions. So she, I don't think, has done anything really outside of Russia or North American besides that.
Right. Wow. Okay, that's crazy, because she's such a huge component of this movie for me too. Like, if she doesn't work, then the movie doesn't work. And the fact that I mean, the film makery of it all actually helps put me in her experience anyway. Like, I knew from the moment, like, there's so much to unpack just with the opener, but let's pussyfoot around that.
Okay.
Just catty corner and more cat. Like, phrases about, like, just kind of putting that aside and just saying, like, once we knew where we were and what was actually happening, or at least got some kind of a sense of, like, what was happening, and saw her standing in a row of people who were all watching this movie being shot, the fact that the guy who was, like, over there behind the camera kept, like, casting these furtive glances in her direction, and not so furtive either. It was pretty clear, and I didn't like him on sight. I was like, I don't know if I trust this guy. Stop looking at him. And it's not her fault for looking at him, but I'm just like, but no, don't focus on him. You got a job to do, hun. And already I'm taking sides. And then when we found out what we found out a little bit later, when she saw him in a compromising position or shooting people in a compromising position, I was like, see, this is what I knew. I had a bad feeling about this guy. I was so proud of myself for
what do they say? I mean, at least for you know, people who are blind, it's just like it heightens all your other senses. So I would imagine that the same thing works, like, if you're mute, wouldn't that heighten your senses as well? Because you can't rely on communicating verbally, so you have to you know, fall back on everything else. And you know, it makes those senses stronger. So, I mean, she's like, she can be more intuitive about just like, hey, that's, I'm getting a bad vibe with that. Mm-hmm. And I loved like, just like watching, there's like these moments where just trying to get people's attention in like the only way she can. And the only person who really seems to get her is her sister, because everyone else is just like, huh, what's going on here? But it's just like her sister's so like in tune with her, and that was like something I really liked about it too. It's just like that relationship throughout the movie, because she's just like, no, I trust her, because it's one of those things where it's just like, who can she rely on? Who can she communicate with? You know, because it's like that, the double barrier there. But even like these people, because it's just like, I think the only Americans are really her sister and her brother-in-law, from what I remember.
Yeah, everybody else. I mean, I know the actress in the beginning. Like, okay, can we just talk about the beginning too? Like,
okay, let's talk about the beginning.
Like diving into this movie, like what it was like. First of all, like it was kind of reassuring to see the little crests, you know, and this was obviously like a festival darling. So I was like, okay, cool. Some people like this movie. I thought it was okay. Cause like cards on the table, you said Mute Witness. I hadn't heard of this movie before. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was like a recent movie from like this past year or the year before. Mm-hmm. And that's why you wanted to do it. And it was going to like, that's why it was now newly available on Shudder. And that's why this new edition was coming out in 4K and in Blu-ray. There's also a solo Blu-ray edition that's coming out the same day.
Yeah.
In June. But so when I saw, 1995, am I watching the right one? And I saw there's one other like Mute Witness that came out like sometime in the mid 20th century. And I'm like, no, that's not it. So I'm like, okay, seems to be the only one I'm going to watch. And it's on Shudder. And that's what Zach said. And it's the only one that's available on Shudder. So I'm going to watch it. So I watch it. I see the crests and then it starts. Okay. I am immediately like stricken by kind of like the Myers house of it all, just by kind of like the low breathing and the killer POV. And then immediately the first slap across the face is the immediate entry into what seems to be this apartment that this woman is just kind of obliviously getting ready for a bath or getting ready for bed or whatever she's doing. So immediately they just go in. I'm like, oh, that's bold. Oh my God. Okay. Already my sense of home invasion is like my dander's up. And then the fact that I'm like, what kind of movie is this? Because there was a trope immediately in place where she, I can't remember what name she called out. I guess it was her lover.
It sounded like Eddie.
Was it Eddie? Okay.
Yeah.
But with an accent, right? So it's like, yeah, day or something like that.
No, she's getting ready for date night. Cause like, I think there was wasn't there like champagne out and all these.
I think so. Yeah. I was so bowled over.
She was putting her lipstick on. I love, cause even like in this. Okay. Here's my question for you, because clearly we find out that this is a movie within a movie.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, is what we're watching, is that what they're filming, or is that the filming of what we're seeing? Like, is that okay? So for instance, is that the character directing it in the movie, like the brother-in-law, or is what we're seeing like directed by Anthony Waller, who directed Mute Witness? Because we're getting all these like close-up shots, these like very European angles. Like we're getting like, you know, bird's eye views of just like walking through hallways, and you see like the wet footprints and all that. Like, because clearly they're not, the camera isn't moving. It's like stationary where they are, where like when we finally start to see all the film crew. Right. So that throws you off too, because it's just like, well, if this is a movie, why aren't we seeing them interacting more, because there are all these different shots here?
I mean, I'd like to think that we're living inside of Andy, the Andy Clark, the director. Yeah. Oh, got a lot to say about him. But anyway, Andy, to think that we're kind of like living in his mind's eye, or maybe in the mind's eye of everybody watching, just kind of seeing how the movie's going to play. Like, okay, it's going to open like this, and it's going to, we've shot all that and we've got it all together. And then finally, like the last thing we see is the thing that is the dud, the thing that they absolutely can't use, which is like her. And this has happened in other movies too, where they don't really pay attention to, you know, which camera is shooting what. They don't focus on that. They just kind of give you the movie. Then all of a sudden, cut, you know, no, darling, what you're supposed to do, blah, blah, blah. So, but the thing was, even before that, I was kind of like disoriented because I noticed that she noticed the feet prints on the carpet, and then she opened the, she went out the door, and then the, her date, presumably, I guess, is the one who falls. And I was just kind of like, wait, so was he behind the door and the guy killed him first, or did the guy kill him way in advance? Like all these logistical questions. So, but I'm hooked in. I'm in. I have nothing but questions, but I'm well, like, what, is this all going to get explained at some point?
The thing,
and then I realize.
Yeah. The thing is that like what they're filming is ostensibly a really bad movie. Like this right. Andy or whatever is not a good director. Like this whole production is bullshit. Everyone on it knows, like they're just watching it play out and they're laughing because they're just ridiculous. Even like later when the cops are watching the reel, they're laughing because it's terrible. And and that's the thing. It's just like the way that it's shot, like all these close-ups, like that is very European. It is very Argento. And as far as I know, Anthony Waller is an American director. He also, the only other credit that people will probably recognize is that he also wrote and directed An American Werewolf in Paris.
Oh, poor thing.
Not a fan?
It's own thing. I mean, we'll have that talk if we ever get to that movie, but ultimately, I don't think it's a successful film.
I think it has its, like, you know, probably a cult following very, very similar to this. And I can see a lot of similarities, like maybe more so in the humor. A lot of that is kind of similar to that. But I remember the last time I watched American Werewolf in Paris is that it does kind of fizzle out towards the end, you know, just like that, you know, the same pattern of just like, we can't sustain what this story is, even though it's kind of a remake of London. But it's sort of the same thing here. So I'm just, maybe Anthony Waller's just like, you know, he has these really fun ideas and he knows how to just kind of like infuse like a very specific, like very unique vision into it, but then just can't really stick to the landing by the end. But I, you know, I'm probably more favorable to American Werewolf in Paris than you are, but this is definitely this film I would put over that one, you know, by a mile. You know, if in all that, like you still, just because you mentioned these European influences, like I definitely feel that. And that's, you know, that's never more present than this opening scene. Cause you talk about sort of like the Michael Myers, how like, you know, the opening scene of Halloween, cause it is kind of like that, but that is just kind of like a one track, you know, a tracking shot throughout the whole thing. This, because we are cutting back to all those very intricate shots. Like it does give it like, it elevates the material, because when she starts like, you know, fake dying or just whatever, trashing the set, because that's kind of, I think like that was such a great misdirect, because at that point, like any other audience would be like, okay, I'm turning this off, I've had enough. And, but then you see like the guy, you know, hand him the cigarette and like the lighter,
oh my God,
and then passing the flask, and you're just slowly going through and you see like, okay, this is a film set. Here's all these people watching it. That it kind of, that's intriguing. That's just like, okay, like I didn't know that this was, I thought this was just a really bad movie that was like, you know, very interestingly shot, but a bad movie. And I love the fact that she's just wrecking the shit out of the set and he's not at any point yelling cut. Like, what are you doing? Why are you trashing the set?
Oh, maybe it'll make a good blooper reel, like at the rap party. But but no, I mean, I'm right there with you as far as like the appreciation of the reveal of the fact that it's not, because like the way I just described like a minute ago, the fact that like one thing goes wrong and they're just like, cut, and then you hear a bell ring and then everybody's just kind of like, all right, people, let's get back. It wasn't like that. There was a much more, I think, capable hand that was conducting the rhythm of this, because I saw that one hand go in and I didn't yet believe or even think that I was on a film set. I just thought, oh, there's two of them murdering her and they're just going to sit there and wait it out. Oh, this is dark. And then I saw the other hand with the flask and I was like, what is this, a conspiracy? And it wasn't until I think we got to the girl's face that I was just kind of like,
I mean,
she was also just kind of like, she was the only one who's kind of like crouching down, who seemed to be really kind of focused on what was going on. I was just kind of like, is this a film? Oh, this is a film. Oh, this is brilliant. I'm really.
Well, it's funny that you say,
this.
Is this
the title card?
Is this a conspiracy? Because I mean, it kind of is. But, it turns out it's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's when we got to see the actress Natasha, who I adored. I wish we could have actually gotten more with her. For a split second, I thought the sex worker that they had in the Blue movie, the snuff film that they were shooting a little bit later, was her for a split second. And then I kept looking at her face, and I'm like, no, that's just another white lady with, you know, like plump cheeks. But
blonde.
And but I love, and even like, that was the thing. Like, I feel like it started out with like the bait and also the misdirects right from the get-go, just because of everything we've just described. And also because my first impulse when I saw, Billy signing, and then I saw, who I didn't know was her sister yet, but when I saw Karen, like whispering, cause she signed to her and then Karen whispered to her, I was like, wait. Because I immediately thought deaf, and then I'm just kind of like, wait, she just whispered to her. Does that mean that maybe she's only deaf in one ear? I mean, I'm just – this movie's
They're really good about kind of like explaining that in a way that works within the context of everything, because they do have the translator on set between like English and Russian, and she's kind of – this translator like looks at Billy and then turns to her sister – Karen, and it's just like explaining it to her, and like, no, she can understand you, she just can't speak. So you know, it's, you know, great way of just, you know, establishing detail without being like, as you know, Billy is
before there's even a question in my head. It's better to make an assumption as an audience member and then have a question and go, wait, what? And then have it explained for me, rather than just kind of like, so everybody, like you said, like, as you all know, we are, you know, our special effects artist, mute Billy is, you know, I'm glad they didn't do any of that. But then I even loved, again, seeds got planted really early, like, because I got a sense from Karen, once it was established that she was a sister, something about her way, I was just like, oh, you're a good sister. Like, even the fact that it occurred to her to stay while they were, like, making their way out into their cars and everything like that, and Billy wanted to go back up, and she wanted to go with her.
Yeah.
And Andy was the one who's just kind of like, no, she's fine, she's got her own car. And I'm like, you dick, she cares about her. And also, you're in a foreign country, she's alone, she's small, you know, like, you should be in pairs just to make sure nothing happens to her. And again, it happened again, where once she got locked in, and she's making the noise for her, I'm like, see, this is why someone should have gone with her. You should have at least waited for her, because then you could have said, oh, sorry, can you not lock up? My sister's up there. But then there wouldn't have been a movie. But
no,
God
there wasn't.
Damn it.
I mean, thank you, Andy, for allowing there to be a movie. but yeah, he is a very frustrating character. And the sort of like the little like slapstick like comedy bits with him are, you know, it's a jarring tonal shift, especially like in this section of the movie where it's supposed to be really tense. And I wasn't really clocking it after a point, so I don't know like how much we checked back with them. Like, I think there's after a point, because they're at home and they're like, what are we going to do? Are we going to go? And that, because I think that there must have been like at least 15 minutes where we didn't see where Karen and Andy were. We were just like kind of in this studio. By the way, like, this fantastic location, practical location, like where they filmed this, like that hallway, the stairwell, the elevator shaft, like everything like that. And that's why I question, like, was this like written as they went along? Because like the components of this studio, I mean, they could have obviously scouted location and found it, but it just seems like everything was so intrinsically part of where this was. There was almost like they found it and they're just like, okay, great, we're gonna have this movie, but let's like improvise around the location that we have, and like, let's use this elevator. Like it really felt like found location and we're writing the script as we go through. Because I mean, like, the script is, it's not a great script, just in terms of like the story. I think that the the action and like everything happening at the beginning, like that's all very well executed based on the performances, based on the cinematography. I love the shadow work as they're coming up the stairs, because it starts as like a very big shadow cast against the light, and like the farther up the stairs they get, the shadow just becomes smaller until it's just like the size of the person. It just seemed, and it did, like you mentioned, that evasive quality of just like how she was just like running and they just like narrowly would miss her. And it got to a point where there was a question, like, they obviously know that she's there, but they're like disposing of the body, like they're doing their thing. So they're like very cognizant that like someone is here and we're going to find her. But it's just like, maybe we have to let her think that we've stopped looking at a point.
God, terrifying. And also, in terms of the shadow work, this jumps ahead some, but one of the moments that actually had me gasp, I was very audible during this movie. But I remember when it was after everything had gone down, you know, the crux of the movie, and the cops had already come and kind of like, you know, brushed everything off. And the custodian, I believe, he reads like a security guard, but I believe they called him the custodian with his dog, is going down to just kind of like close everything. And also, I suspect, like, maybe just kind of get a second look and just really, you know, get a sense of the space, just to see like, what did they look at and what was there? Is there anything that's kind of out of place? And then when his dog kind of leads him over to, I'm guessing, the furnace. He walked toward it and there was a light, and I couldn't tell. It was either a really happy accident or really meticulously planned, and bravo. Either way, bravo, because it worked. But when there's a shot of him looking from a distance at the furnace, and there's a light behind him that you don't see casting any shadows until he slowly starts to move forward. And I think it's the brim of his hat you see just kind of move into shadow, like right next to him. And for a split second, I thought it was somebody else.
Yeah.
Because you're just waiting for somebody to prevent him from making the discovery. And it was just his hat.
Well,
so then I got to relax a little.
Yeah, based on the music cue at that moment as well. Also, I really love the score. But just based on that, because it's the pillar you're talking about, and like the hat kind of makes it look like there's like something sharp that's like coming towards him. And then you just see like, no, it's his shadow. So, I mean, it might have been an accident that like the composer was like, let's make a meal out of that. Or, you know, it was intentional and we're like, let's, you know, play with that.
Let's do something with shadow work.
And I would lean towards the latter. Like, I think that this is like, again, I have to watch American Werewolf in Paris, just to see what, components, you know, carry over just in terms of Anthony Waller's style. But, you know, just based on this movie alone, it just seems like he is a very visual filmmaker. Like, there's so much to it. Because, I mean, if this is a movie that was just sort of like, you know, if it was like a lesser filmmaker who just wanted to shoot something basic, like if it was a studio movie where just like, let's just hire whoever, like, none of this would have worked. None of it would have worked. The movie wouldn't have even been made. No, I mean, in this day and age.
Well, I mean, it's so funny because there's elements of it that I'm just kind of like, I think I would have appreciated it had I seen it in 1995 because of the number of tropes it embraces, but also the number of tropes that it completely just turns around and says, no, we're not going to go that route. There are enough movies that have gone that route. We're going to divert your expectations and actually give you a treat and push you in this direction instead. The key one for me, the biggest one, was, oh God, it breaks my heart just to even think about it now. Like, I just watched this today, like literally about an hour or so ago. Or an hour and a half. So I'm still, you know, feeling it. It's reverberating within me. But I remember my reaction to, when, poor Billy gets pushed out of that building and falls into that dumpster full of the film canisters.
Yeah.
And I, again, audible response, full on, whoa, you know, and I'm sitting alone in my house. So this is a good movie. And I'm just kind of wondering, she's disoriented, you know, is she going to get up in time to escape him or anything? And luckily, like, just as he reaches her, her sister is there. And Karen goes over and rushes up to them and starts immediately inquiring about what's going on. And he starts going, oh, she fell. It's just, you know, and don't move her, don't move. And he's holding her down. You can see his hands holding her arms in place, threatening, not threatening, but saying that, like, there's a threat, like, she could be paralyzed after that fall. If you move her, go get help. She's like, well, I'll stay with her. You go get help. It's like, no, and don't move her. No, I'll just stay her and keep her in place because she doesn't know. And she might move and she might, you know, paralyze herself. She's like, and her sister starts to go. And I'm like, oh my God, Karen. And I that's another pause I did. And I literally just started writing like, the creepy fucker Selena Kyle'd Billy. And I have my first beef with this movie. Your sister is being pinned by a strange man who claims she fell. You leave her alone with him and you haven't even got her side of the story yet. And then I unpaused it and I saw her decide not to go because she saw her sister's eyes. And had that
you
connection.
You need to, like, watch movies without pausing, though.
I know. But it was that much of a reaction. I was just kind of like, okay, I have immediately. And I wanted to remember the problem I had. Because, again, that's what this movie does. It's like,
I can just see you writing, like, an 8-page missive. Like, pause. Okay, let's turn this bullshit back on.
Why women need to be smarter in horror movies and why they need to stop being written by men. And I'm like, oh, you immediately proved me wrong. Like, this man obviously knew that I was going to have, as an audience member, a reaction like that and gave her, an intuitive connection with her sister and also just, like, socially, just off social cues, like, wait a minute, this isn't right, and turned around wordlessly and just kind of said, like, why don't you let her go? Wait, hold on. Like, what's going on? Let her go. She's trying to talk to me and she can't do it if she doesn't have her hands free. And it's just kind of like, yes, like, maybe the adrenaline got to you in a minute and that's why you almost made a horrible, hideous mistake. And instead, you got him off of your sister because he can't say anything without giving himself away. Yeah. And all I can feel, like, literally the endorphins, like, releasing in my body as I describe it, like the relief that I felt that, like, okay, we're not going to go the way so many movies have gone before, where a guy gaslights a woman and she can't help, you know, this person who she cares about. So for that alone, like, that was probably the biggest one, but there were a few more throughout this film. It just kept me guessing. And I understand what you mean by saying, like, it's maybe not like the greatest script ever written, but there's what they do with it. And again, like, I tend to lean into the personal, the interpersonal, you know, anyway.
Well, for
seeing this, I just wanted to see these sisters win, you know, ultimately is what I wanted
to see. Well, I mean, for me, because I completely forget the last two thirds of the movie. Because I had it, like, usually that was my first experience being like, okay, and then this is where it ends. And then, like, you know, don't worry about the rest. So this was the first time last night, just kind of I'd seen it maybe twice all the way through, but, you know, this was the first time. Okay. What exactly was it that happened? I remember, like, you know, got very absurd and there was some sort of, like, conspiracy, like, government conspiracy or something. And I actually found myself enjoying it probably up until, like, I'll say I never stopped enjoying it, but, like, just in terms of, like, following it and just being engaged with it, probably around, like, an hour eight, I clocked it because that's when the detective, the undercover detective, showed up.
Larson.
And he just, like, was dropped into this movie like a deus ex machina of just, like, I'm here to save you. You know, like, you know, she was about to be killed and he came in and it was just like, now I'm going to introduce this whole new thing. You know, it's like almost like this was a spy thriller and, you know, she was just about to be killed. And then James Bond comes in and it's just like, you're in the middle of this and you come with me if you want to live. And at that point, and he's like, you know, dropping all this exposition. And I'm just like, okay, the movie, you know, lost the plot, you know, just like it lost me. And we're just kind of seeing shit happen at that point. But from that part, cause like 30 minutes is the moment you describe where she finally, like, bursts through the door and then falls over into the dumpster. And that's kind of where it, you know, it always ended for me. But even after that, like, I still feel like there is a lot of tension that's still being played with. Cause, you know, we talk about like the scene where she goes home and she's in the bathtub and we know that they're still coming to kill her and they break into her apartment and all that. And I feel like it still works. It's just that, like, this is where tonally it starts to jump around because, like I had mentioned, we're getting the scenes earlier of Andy and just like, you know, cutting him, making his famous chili and all that. And that's like, it's, there's a chili bit too Clark. Much of it.
Is that what
Yeah. Like it's there, but I mean, once the movie focuses, it's like, okay, we're back with Billy. And then like by this point on, like, you know, the second act, I guess, there's just so much of him and there's so much of this hijinks, like the Russian couple who live downstairs and just like the the noise complaints and all that. Like, it's just like the comedy was just a little too much. But, you know, when it worked, it worked. So, I mean, my opinion of this is like the movie in full is that I think it would have been a really great short film. Like, if it was just, if you just had this concept of, like, this mute woman who, you know, gets locked into this building after hours, witnesses this crime, and it's just like, how do I escape? And if the ending was just her escaping, and that was the end of the movie. Like, that, to me, this would have been perfect. But I think because of, you know, everything that follows, like, what do you rate this on a Letterboxd scale? Because Yeah. I would say 3.5 because I think that everything that's like really works for it, like, you know, elevates that score higher. But, you know, the stuff that, you know, where it eventually lands just kind of diminishes that greatness.
Okay. I was more, I mean, I don't know. The fact that it's a movie, something about, okay, that's another thing. It's like, I think I don't know if this is good or bad. It just kind of is. One thing that I found with the comedy or the more comic moments that were kind of sprinkled about the movie, it gave me a sense that I couldn't even articulate to myself as I was watching it, but it just kind of gave me a sense that, like, I wasn't watching a movie that was going to end in a bleak way. Like, there was hope. If there's room for levity and there's room to laugh, then there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Again, I'm using that metaphor again. But And I think I liked that because it still managed to pull the rug out from under me. I mean, literally, like, that ends up happening at one point in this movie. Someone has the rug pulled out from under them. But and it's Karen. Rock on. Yeah. Pull it. But for me, because I wanted to see them win so badly, these two sisters in particular, like, I would have been, there were many times throughout the movie where I would have been fine if Andy would have just bought the farm. But if the two of them could have made it through, or if one of them didn't make it, then it was going to break my heart. But it wasn't until, and it will go right to the very end of the movie, it wasn't until she was standing out there in front of the firing squad, as it were, and then out came Larson, and he just started pelting her with bullets, that I thought, oh, like, literally the second it started happening, I started to feel shocked. Like, did he shoot? No, he squibbed her. But it kept me guessing right up until that point. Like, I was just kind of like, are you a good guy? Are you a bad guy? Like, are you a real cop? Or are you, like, I keep seeing you on this walkie. Are you walking with cops? Are you walking with, like, the Russian mafia, or are you like these lords of the underworld? Are you in it with them, or are you? And the fact that it wasn't even like completely laid out, I was also grateful for, was at the very end of the movie, he could have said, no, I was undercover the entire time. I had to make them think I was one of them in order to say, it's like, no, we can get all of that. So I was grateful for that. But I guess I'm answering your question and not, but the answer to your question is I think it worked a little bit more in terms of, again, the ride of it all. I was never checked out, so I can't really criticize it. All I can say is if the comedy beats had been extricated, it probably would have been a little bit more tonally consistent, but that's not really something that I require from my movies. I think if it were a short film and they had taken the comedic beats out, it might have been much more high octane, and I probably would have had a lot more questions in my head about, like, how is this going to end? Is she going to be okay?
Yeah.
And is she going to survive? But I don't know if I need that either. Because, like I said, it just kept my focus. I didn't know what to focus on in a great way. Mm-hmm. Even like, I was going to say something earlier and I can't remember what it was now, but, just in term, I'm hitting a break. Anyway, okay.
Well,
ultimately, the rating I would give it, I'm thinking around 4 stars because I'm that impressed with what they did with what they had.
Okay.
And I haven't had it in my life long enough for it to be higher than that, but it could. I could see it going higher if I keep watching this and if I keep rediscovering.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the second viewing is going to be.
No, that's
like
fair. Yeah, no, because I would say, like, first act, 5 stars. Everything else, I don't know. But, like, because it's just, like, we get to, like, once Larson shows up, it's just, like, stuff is happening. And that's just what it feels like. It's just, like, stuff is happening until the end of the movie. And it's just this absurd, the police are in on it. And, like it's just, like, it's so much, the scope of this thing just became so much larger. And it's just... The movie itself, the scope of the movie of what they're filming is not that. So it just felt disproportionate of everything. Like it just like it was so fantastical. Like we're gonna tell this huge story, and it's like, you know, less is more.
it can be,
which is a lesson that, you know, I've had to learn, you know, like writing, my own script, you know, it's just like, you know, you don't need to go bigger. And I think that that's one of the things that had this movie kind of maybe focused on, just like, okay, let's pull it back a bit here, like pump the brakes, you know, where can we go with this that, you know, still is in within the realm of possibilities of like the story that we started with, just in terms of like these two. Cause I mean, like the most threatening, adversaries in this movie were the two, Arcady and Laiosha, I believe is their name. The two making the snuff.
The
film.
Fuckers, yeah.
Yeah. And they're taken out around like the hour point in the movie, and then it's just like it becomes like this. I mean, I guess they're Alec Guinness, which we'll talk about in a second, but the just like, you know, all these nameless police officers and just like these people in on this conspiracy and stuff like that. They're just like, you know, it doesn't feel like there is a real, like actual tangible threat to them. It's just like, at this point, it's just like, we're just throwing everything out there and it's gonna like, you know, it ends up in just like probably the most comedic thing ever. And, you know, like the comedy for me, like where it works is, you know, some of the decision, like the stylistic decisions, like whenever, and they even mention this when they're talking about the snuff films, when like the ambassador's there and the two police officers, and they're just saying the whole idea is just like there's something about like capturing the moments of a victim's face right before death. Like that's just something that I guess is so valuable to them. And that moment happens in the movie, and every time it does, there's this like this jump in, like it just like, you know, dun, 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 as it goes closer, and like the score does that thing, which like I love. Like it's such a hilarious beat, and they do it I think like 4 or 5 times, because the first time we see it is with the prostitute that they're filming at the beginning, and then it's with Billy in the moment that you talked about where Karen is like going to run away, and then she turns around and sees Billy and just like, oh no, I know that expression. That's the look of someone who's about to, you know, thinks that they're about to die. And then the I guess the bad cop tied up in the car at the end before it blows up. Just things like that. Like I like that comedy. I felt like where they, you know, really tried to go a little bit more slapstick, like when she pulled the rug and the guy accidentally shot the guy it was awesome. But it was just like it from that point on it felt like, you know, okay, are we in an Austin Powers movie now? Like what's going on here?
Okay, well, I won't go quite that far, like, because I mean, Austin Powers, like, I don't know if I've ever taken a moment of those movies seriously, and I don't think I'm supposed to either. But I will say, just in response to like you, because like you bringing up like Larson, like sitting there, like bringing up the whole thing about like, you know, looking in the eyes of like people, because he's talking about how he's witnessed, you know, these snuff films, and he's trying to catch these people. And the thing that like haunts him about it really, is, you know, the look in the eyes of people, like as they're about to be killed and everything like that. I wrote like a, paraphrase of it because he said a lot more, but it was something to the effect of, where is it? I don't even remember. Anyway, he's sitting there, he's saying, oh yeah, flashing across. You can basically see the movie. I don't even know where my notes are. Anyway, okay, so he says it. Sorry, folks. I'm stumbling here. It's a weird day. So, but Larson is basically like saying, reiterating the thing that has already been kind of like spelled out in terms of like what motivated Karen to stay with Billy and what Billy can't shake about the sex worker getting killed and everything like that. So immediately for me, aside from it, like planting seeds for like some, you know, potentially comedic moments, from your vantage point, it's, for me, it also creates a link. And also kind of gave me a little bit of insight as to like what is motivating Larson, what he's fighting for. And then when we start to think he's a bad guy, it's not just kind of like, I thought you were a good guy. You're a bad guy. You suck. It was like, you fucking told a story about what it's like to look into the eyes of someone when they know they're going to die and how that like haunts you and moves you to like, you know, fight for their justice and everything like that. And now you're a traitor? You're an asshole. Like, I got so much more enraged at him because of the level of betrayal, because like there's betrayal, but then there's also just kind of like putting on a performance as someone, you know, and pretending to care about something that you don't. So when I thought he was a bad cop, I was just kind of like, you're a sociopath. I hate you. And then I realized you're not a sociopath. You have a cover. Fuck, this movie can't just let me relax. So that worked for me. But I did want to ask in terms of the tonal consistency, because another thing that came up for me that I don't think did what this movie did in terms of just kind of like being, you know, like here's some lighter moments, here's some whatever, that I think was just kind of like felt like one tone. I'd have to see it again, but I haven't seen it in a long time. But when I saw Hush, do you prefer something like that in terms of like a character's trajectory or the movie's course that it runs? Because I don't remember
like Hush, Mike Flanagan,
in that one. The one with John, what's his name? I'm not prepared to.
The Netflix movie. I mean, it's been so long since I've seen it. I remember
me too.
Really enjoying it, but it definitely had a much different vibe and style that it's, you know, it's really hard to say that. I think like a movie like that is really, even just like in the way that it is filmed, like just Mike Flanagan is a very like, you know, North American, like just like very American vision with things. This, I mean, maybe like Mute Witness can get away with it because it is like, first of all, set in Russia. It's filmed like it's a European movie, and maybe there is like more opportunity to get that levity in there, but it was more like the way that I saw it was like, it was the intensity, like when it was intense, that intensity was really high, that's the thing that was working for me. Because I mean, like, I don't need a movie to be serious or anything, like, or just, you know, because it's hard to say, it's been so long since I've seen Hush. But
you should put that on the list.
No, because then I have to get Netflix and. But I don't know. And these are movies that are like 20. When did Hush come out? 2017 or something. Sure, so it's like over 20 years.
Maybe even earlier.
Well, let's just say 20 years separating them.
Sure.
So it's very different. And that's the thing, like this is a movie from 1995. It doesn't even really have that 90s vibe to it. Like obviously it has like a very pre-Scream vibe to it.
Sure.
But just because it is so European, it's not, it doesn't feel like anything else that was coming out at that time.
No, I can't think of anything that I would hold like as a parallel, even though we've made like these references to like other things, and I'm sure there are more that are going to come up.
Yeah.
But I'm not kind of sitting there going like, oh, I get it. This is a fill in the blank, you know, kind of movie. Yeah. This is the subgenre this movie belongs to.
Yeah.
It does seem to kind of occupy, I'd say, I mean, at most, like 90s indie horror, maybe.
90s indie, but there's even like maybe like more 80s in there. Cause like one correlation that, you know, I would think of with this is the movie Stage Fright, which is also Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's just like this similar scenario where the final girl at the end is sort of like trying to get out of this building, like find the key and get out of this theater, and the killer is there, and not like either, it's not really clear if like the killer is unaware of her presence or just kind of like biding his time and waiting until, you know, as far as she knows, he doesn't know that she's there. And it's kind of a similar situation here. And so it's like that setup felt very 80s to me. But yeah, it definitely has like that indie 90s, like that early 90s vibe to it.
Right. You never forget the look in the victim's eyes. I just found it. Okay. I just wanted to say it.
That moment at the end, like where was it set up that car was like going to blow up?
I don't know. But by that point, I was so just kind of like, what? Like, I can't relax.
No, that's the thing. It's just like so much crazy shit was happening. I guess it's because he's like, that's so weird that they didn't, I forget what he said, that they didn't want the diskette is what they kept calling
it.
Yes. The whole diskette thing, because that's another thing. Because I remember seeing that earlier in the movie when she knocks over the thing and the diskette kind of goes sliding under the door, wherever that was, the boiler, whatever that thing was. I didn't think anything of it because it was just like, it was never relevant. And then it became relevant again because they're just like, where's the diskette? Where's the diskette? And it just felt like, it felt like another instance of like, oh, wait, we need to go back and just like add in this shot of this thing sliding under the door because we're making this movie up as we go along. But the, I mean, the reason why I believe that, and this kind of ties into Alec Guinness being in this movie, he is uncredited, by the way, but he has a cameo in it. And I don't know if you are aware of this, but that footage was actually filmed in 1985, so 10 years before the movie came out.
Oh, my God.
So Anthony Waller had met Alec Guinness by chance or whatever, and he just asked him, like, you know, would you – you know, be interested in just like filming like this one scene, this one, like he didn't even know what it was, but it's just like, this is what it is. Like, these were the lines. It takes place in a underground parking garage. Like, you're in the car and you just sort of like lean forward from the shadows and you just say this stuff. And that was like the cameo. So it's like, it's almost like he filmed this with the idea that it was going in a different movie and it never happened. And then he had that footage and was just like, well, I'm going to use this for something else 10 years later. Right. So Alec Guinness was just like, sure, why not? I guess he really hit it off with him and didn't without being paid, just like did it for free of his own time. Just like spent, you know, a couple hours. They filmed this shot. And I guess in the movie, it's the scene where he, you know, he says the stuff and then they just, you know, have, you know, obviously in this version, it's set at the back of the studio. It's not underground, but they, you know, movie magic. They made it look like it wasn't. And then they just showed like the Laosha or whatever talking to him. So we didn't, you know, have to see Alec Guinness, who this year, at like 1995, would have been 10 years older and retired from acting. And then for the end of the movie, when he sort of leans forward and looks out the window, that's the same shot of him. Or he kind of like sits back. It's the same shot, just reversed.
Oh my God. That is so cool. So if this movie is Plan 9 from Outer Space, then Alec Guinness is Bela Lugosi and Anthony Waller is Edward D. Wood Jr.
That's actually the perfect way to look at it. This is the Ed Wood of 90s indie horror.
I had forgotten. I remembered seeing something slide out of the purse and out of view when poor Billy, like I keep calling her poor Billy, poor Billy tumbles over that coat rack and everything, and she had to just start collecting everything. And I thought she saw it, and just kind of like let it go because they can't see it, so it doesn't look like anything's been tampered with.
Yeah.
But I thought, ooh, that's probably going to be significant later. And the movie made me completely forget about it until it was time. Like, literally, they were asking for the diskette, and I'm like, what diskette? Because also, I couldn't tell what it was.
Yeah.
So I just saw something, you know, reflective slide under something. Yeah. So I was just kind of like, because that was another thing I really appreciated. She was sitting there with Larson while he's driving, and he's asking her to remember. So she just kind of like gets this distant gaze on her face, and she starts having the flashback of the murder and everything like that again.
Yeah.
And she almost kind of like pulls out and just kind of like looks back at him. He's like, keep remembering, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she does, and she goes back. And I just kind of love that he can kind of see the movie on her face. Like he can see the, but you haven't found it yet because the light bulb isn't above your head. Mm-hmm. So, but then she remembers it sliding under. I'm like, oh, that thing. So like I said, like this movie, yeah, totally.
Well, I guess like, cause I remember that's an element that I forget about it. But once, you know, I saw it again, I'm like, wait, does that come up? And then when they mention the diskette, I'm like, oh, okay, now pieces are starting to come back to me. But what is on a diskette? Do we even, I guess it's just like protected information, you know, it's like naming names or something. Like why this woman had this diskette to begin with? Like that's, you know, that's where the movie kind of loses itself. It's just like, oh, we're just going to have all this stuff here that just, you know, happens. And,
movie needs to movie.
Yeah. I mean, in order to enjoy it, you just got to have to just roll with it.
Mm-hmm. I just presumed it had like a lot more of those snuff films that they were going to sell to him, and that they were going to get the money for, and then they were going to go on and do whatever you do with a snuff film. I guess sell them on the street and get people to pay top dollar for them. I don't know what you do with snuff films.
Do you remember the movie 8mm?
Yeah, I never saw it, but I remember the poster, Nicolas Cage's face.
Nicolas Cage, because it's like he's a private investigator, if memory serves, and a client of his. This old lady finds this snuff film in her late husband's collection, and she's like, I don't know what this is. Like, this is really disturbing, but like, can you please like look into this? So I just want to make sure that like the woman in this movie wasn't actually murdered. So it just like kind of takes him down this like rabbit hole. And I love movies like that, where just like we're going down this like dark, twisted path, and Joaquin Phoenix is in it. James Gandolfini. I think, is it Peter Stormare? He might be in it as well. Maybe I'm misremembering. But no, it's like, it's got a great cast. But it's just like, when I think of like movies about snuff films, I'm just like, oh, 8mm.
Okay.
And New Witness now.
So it's that. Okay, cool. I'll have to see 8mm then. Like, I was always intrigued by it, but I just never got around to it. I also remember feeling, speaking of just in terms of tropes, like I literally exclaimed something I don't think I've ever exclaimed before that I've only ever heard in reference to like on like sitcoms from the 80s when somebody's watching a horror movie and to convey the fact that they're watching a horror movie, they have like, ooh, spooky music happening or, you know, something like that. And then somebody just goes, don't open that door. I did that to Billy when she was in her apartment on her phone call, her little computer, you know.
My name is Billy Hughes.
Yeah, right, with Karen. And then she gets a knock at the door, or I think it was the doorbell ring. And she got up, and thank God her sister heard it and knew that there was something going on. Again, like, I'm just kind of like, thank you for making these people intuitive and smart and worried, because they should be, based off of everything.
The sister was, but they're like, Billy was kind of inconsistent. There'd be times where she was really smart, but then there'd be times where just like, okay, come on.
I was upset that she was opening the door. I was like, okay, you don't see anybody out there, and you're going to just like, that latch doesn't do shit. And anyone.
No, you just kick in the door.
Like
just,
that. Yeah. Exactly. You know, you're not going to get in this apartment unless you push hard with your hand. But, and the fact that, and then the thing that made me kind of like, it's not like a deal breaker for me or anything like that, but the fact that, he pulled out the bolt cutters and was getting ready. Like that was working for me. I was like, oh my God, he's going to cut the thing, when he could just push it. But I thought it was funny. Yeah. But then she pulled up the umbrella and I was kind of like, yeah, jab him. And she didn't. She's trying to get the bolt cutters to prevent them from cutting. I'm like, get him. Your umbrella has a sharp
poke him in
point.
The eye.
Put
yeah.
it in his esophagus.
If
put
it,
it
worked,
in his aorta.
If Sydney could do it on Billy Loomis.
Yeah.
Know, Billy so can I was... do it on, what was his, Alexi? Arcady.
I was losing my mind. And then it just kind of broke my heart that she ran over to the window to the guy who was peeping on her just moments before and just totally
flashed
him.
Oh, she just like she was getting, I was surprised by how much nudity she showed because I didn't remember any of that. It followed out when she's in the car and she's changing Larson kind of like, takes a peek, and then she just looks at him and smiles and just like kisses him like, thank you for saving my life, which was a sweet moment. But she just like, yeah, she just like, you know, would go back and forth on like, can I trust this guy? It was just getting kind of tedious after a while. They're just like, you literally showed him everything and then kissed him, you know, like and like, come for dinner or whatever the
that was sweet. Yeah. Especially the way he did it, because I don't know, it's kind of like, it's like having like beginner's pronunciation, because he seemed to do it really, really large over his chest, like, ah, dinner, you know, like when he before he got in the car. But I also just I remember thinking, like, it did work for me, the sense of humor, while I'm also feeling get her while she's out running the killer of the two. Like, there's creepy killer and there's creepy cameraman. So killer guy is like after her, and he's trying to get into the bathroom, and I am just like beside myself. And I love that she opened up the medicine cabinet, like just looking for anything, and she's chucking shit at him. She's just so proactive. And then she opens the medicine cabinet and sees something called stress tabs, which I'm guessing are to relieve stress, like pills you take or something like that. And I thought, in a situation like that, that's a good thing to have, you know, like cinematically for me to go, you're going to need them, darling. But
I was getting Shining from that, obviously, Shelley,
totally.
But also Child's Play 1 with the knife, except we didn't get that. There was actually, well, because she's mute, but there was actually one moment when she's in the, when she's in the bottom of the elevator and she's hiding in the garbage bags and they're shining the flashlight, and it sort of like illuminates the body, like you can see the face of the woman in the garbage bag right next to her, and she opens her mouth to scream, but nothing comes out. But the score does this like this like tingly thing, like that is like her screaming, but through the music, which I thought was like really effective. I love elevators like that, by the way. Those old creepy things, like just like in horror movies where those exist. We had one at the nightclub that I used to work at, because that was sort of like, you know, we would transport like bottles and garbage from like the upstairs or downstairs, like at the end of the night. And we would all kind of like scare each other at this place, because like the building was haunted. There were ghosts. So there were like a number of times where, you know, I like someone would sneak up on me and just like, or whatever. And I fell for it. But I remember one time I was like trying to scare one of the bussers, and I went into the elevator, because you can like climb up, because that's how you get to the roof. Like the elevator goes up to the top floor, and then you climb up the ladder, and there's a like sort of a ledge there and a hatch to go out into the roof. But I just climbed up the elevator. I stood on top of the elevator and like let him go in for like however long he was doing it. Just like, I'm just going to wait and I'm going to like scare the shit out of him. And
oh my God.
Yeah.
I would have killed you. I would have been, and it would have been accidental. It would have been self-defense or just, you know, reflexive. And that's what I would have.
Well, because like that, like what? Well, it wouldn't have been, because I was like, we're separated by like a cage sort of thing. But this is one of those things that has like the wooden gate, and then like a metal. It's like it's a wooden gate, a metal gate, and then there was like another metal door on the outside. So it's just like really like heavy duty. And that's why I always thought like, oh, that place would be like a really good for a horror movie too, just because of that. And because it was like freaky to be there like late at night alone, or just like anytime alone.
Like when it, especially when it's dark. Freight elevator. Yeah, feel like, I mean, a lot of freight elevators that I've been in places that I've worked have that feel where you have to, you know, shut the cage and turn the thing and then open the big, you know, the horizontal doors and everything like that. Yeah. But speaking of, though, like potential scares and everything like that, like I was really, really happy in the kill scene when she eliminated Killer Guy.
One, yeah.
Yeah, when she threw the hairdryer in that bathtub, I was applauding.
And the special effects.
Yes. And it was, yes, just watching it course through. I'm like, die, motherfucker! I was so ready. And then, that's again, like, the thing. Like, everything that followed, it was just kind of like... because, I, you know what I think it was? This is what it was. They bought so much time and got so much slack cut for them, the creepy killer and creepy camera guy, when the cops came into the scene and they were investigating every accusation that she made. And none of the real pertinent questions were being asked, like, okay, the woman who was being killed, where is she then? You know, like, I appreciate Karen protecting the film and all of that, but it's like, okay, well, if there was a woman who was murdered and she wasn't murdered and this woman is mistaken, where is the woman? No one brought that up once. So that was really making me upset. The fact that they were chuckling the whole time they were speaking this other language and the three Americans are just kind of like sitting there, like out of the loop, like not understanding like what's going on, but visibly you can tell what's going on. The injustice of it all was so just grating on my person that I wondered, like, is this what the movie, this can't be like what the rest of the movie's going to be, just them like gaslighting her and just like preventing her from making any kind of progress, that when we finally, I think the fact that they were taken out as early as they were was a boon to me, because I'd seen them get the upper hand, and I don't like that world. I like the world that happens later, where one of them gets electrocuted and the other one gets shot by a guy who you're wondering, like, is it a shady cop? Is it a cop at all? Or is it just another mafioso guy who's just kind of like, you know, dressed up as a cop, which is what I think they were. And then, but I'm still don't know for sure.
Well, I mean, in whatever world this was, like, those cops were terrible. I'm talking about the ones who were investigating it. Because, I mean, if they were doing a proper job, they would have looked all over that building. They would have found, I mean, I'm assuming that they didn't throw the body in the furnace yet, so they had it somewhere, but I mean, there was more that could have been done. There was more cops that could have been called. But like, the thing is, like, this, and this is the stupidity here of just the fact that Arcady even like takes the prop knife and starts stabbing him with, like, making a big fucking mess and doing that while there's two cops. They even draw their guns, like they're gonna shoot him. I'm just like, why would you do that? Like, you could, like, especially in this day and age, where police are just shooting left, right, and center, that you're going to do something stupid in front of police like that. And they just, all they do is, like, they yell at him and then, like, pull him off. And they're just like, see, it's a joke. Fake blood. Yeah. And that's actually Dracula there.
That's probably another point where it might have helped, the fact that it was in Russia, because you really don't know. I don't know. From Russian police, I don't know what you have to do to set them off or anything like that to get them to shoot you. If this would have taken place in Chicago, the fact that they didn't shoot a guy that they saw actively stabbing another guy, even just to kind of like deter him, not shoot to kill, but just to like get him to stop, like get him in the leg or get him in the arm or the shoulder or something like that. Yeah, that wouldn't have been believable. So, but I mean, yeah, it was. That was infuriating. Also, the fact that, like, they never separated the two men. That was another thing I was wondering, like, why aren't these two men being separated and asked questions like, where is the woman, the actress then, in this movie that you were making? Like, because if they come up with different answers, guess what? They're lying. And now you, I mean, oh God. Yeah, they, I should seriously consider them for the cherry picker, but, but then again, like, I loved what followed when, the danger, because I thought the danger was in one place, and then all of a sudden she seems to be in a safe place with Larson, Billy does, after she electrocutes one guy and evades the other one. And then he's stuck there, like, unconscious, basically. Oh, because that was another thing. The fact that, like, she's there naked, you know, just basically like a robe barely containing her nudity, and the guy seemed to have nothing but, like, nefarious, unholy intentions and everything like that. Like, I didn't like the creepy camera guy when he had her bent over the table and everything like that.
Lyosha.
And yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
I didn't like, I was kind of like, oh, don't go this way, movie. I really don't need this. And then thank God, there's Larson, and he beats him over the head because he knows they're no good. And even though he watched the movie, she's still in danger. Or he may as well check in with her and just let her know there is something going on. So I need to get your side of the story. Like, I'd love whatever it is that brought the two of them together. But then when they leave, and then Karen and fucking Andy get back to the apartment and find him there.
I'm sorry. Pause. Karen and Andy. Is their last name Barkley?
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that because they're love interests and not a mother and a son, though they may as well be, the way that he, like, constantly has her going like, what are you doing? I didn't. Is there a Chucky in this movie? Or a Mikey?
Is there a Billy and
Hey Mikey?
Child's Play?
I think it's I'd be seriously shocked if it was intentional. They're both pretty vague, you know, American names. Yeah. Like, just, you know, every
well,
like,
the Argento, it feels like every movie, like, the most common names that, especially for characters who are supposed to be American, are Mark and Sarah. If you go, like, look at any Argento movie, like, every single one of them, there's a Mark and there's a Sarah. Nice. There's a few Carlos as well, but I feel like those are more like the Italian locals.
Right.
So yeah, but that's the thing. It's just like Anthony Wall. Like, as far as I know, he's an American filmmaker. Maybe I am. Actually, I should probably check that because I'm just like,
do your due diligence, sir.
Yeah.
But I loved the fact that, like, they kind of discover creepy camera guy. I'll never remember his name. And they run into a room together. I don't remember if it's the bedroom or wherever it is, but we just see them run behind a closed door and immediately hear the screaming. I just wrote the exchange. She's like, get the chair. And Andy's like, what chair? And she goes, the chair! Just screaming her head off at him because he's not helpful in a crisis at all. He's already made that abundantly clear, but he's just going on being, you know, pretty inept. He gets better as the movie progresses, but
okay,
I like
so
seeing her scream at him.
So here's the sitch. My faux pas. He's British, but was born in Beirut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's British.
Huh. Well, he grew up in both the Middle East and England. So there you go. That's why the movie looks so amazing, because European vision.
Okay, he just wanted to shoot it in America. Okay,
yeah,
and then
okay.
ended up shooting it in.
Yeah, and I guess I just got because it's just like American Werewolf in Paris. Like,
yeah. But at a certain point, yeah, I mean, I did kind of, I just wrote in all caps, I am so confused. And it wasn't like in a bad way. Like, I wasn't like, where is the plot going? I just didn't know emotionally what context I was supposed to, you know, who am I supposed to hitch my wagon to? Obviously Billy, but who can she rely on? And
not many people.
And then I laughed again when Billy and, where Andy and Karen are running through the hallway in the warehouse toward the end, and he's got the gun and he's just dropping bullets as he's trying to, like, load them into the gun. Yeah. And Karen's running ahead of him. She just kind of looks behind her and does like a comedic take, like a, oh, you know, like, come on.
Well, they were just getting in the way at that point. They did manage to knock out the one guy and then handcuff him to the stairs.
That's true.
As a team.
True.
But yeah, they were just getting in the way at that point.
And at that point, it did feel kind of like Goonies for adults. I can acknowledge that. Like, just kind of like a bunch of, you know, sweet, you know, people who care about each other, who are all kind of like in over their heads and outrunning things, just kind of like trying to make the best they can out of it. And, you know, and you make a movie about that with a few laughs here and there and loyalty. And that's what you got. That's what I, and then all I could think after I knew that, like I said, I knew that Larson had to help, Billy squib herself and everything. But all I could think was poor Karen having to witness that, not knowing that her sister is squibbed.
What's the line from Goonies? Goonies never die.
Yeah. Don't say that. Never say that. Goonies never say die. Yeah.
Muties never say die.
Muties. Oh my God.
No, I think it's Goonies never die.
Or is I thought he said Goonies never,
never say,
say
die.
Die. I think
okay.
it's Goonies. I think it's Goonies never say die. Because I remember we played it in the video store I worked in on a loop, and I remember the rhythm of sweet little Sean Astin having to say it over and over again.
Yeah,
Goonies never say die.
But, I need to watch that. It's come up in conversation.
It was never my movie. One of those movies that. Well, it was one of those movies that was like again kind of. Horror adjacent when I was really little, and I think I saw it way too young because what's his name? The Hey You Guys! Sloth. I can't remember his name even. Yeah. That guy. Scared the shit out of me, and I turned it off. I just couldn't watch it.
He always reminds me of Jason Voorhees in it's like part 3 or part 4 whenever the mask comes off, and it's just like, oh, it's just like a more misshapen Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, slightly cartoonier part 3. But all I could think was Karen's going to need therapy. She's seen her sister shot to death. And then, but I mean, she seemed pretty relieved and pretty unfazed by it at the end. But then, like, fuck Andy with that squib, that last squib. I was just kind of like, God, this movie just won't end. Like, and not in a bad way, but just like, it keeps kind of like giving us these final beats. And the only other criticism I have for the movie, because it was like one of the last things that happened, and I was like, you can't just it's when Larson gets out of the car after it explodes, and the stuntman who has exited the car is quite visibly on fire, his back is, and then I'm thinking, oh, somebody better run to him, get him a blanket. No blanket. He's not on fire anymore. Once we cut back and it's actually Larson, he's just laying there with his hands like over his face. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, the movie's over anyway. Yeah. Whatever. Cool. All right. Yeah. Walk off into the sunset.
Where do they go from there? It's just like, she's dead, sort of. Like, how are they going to get out of the country with that? I feel like there's going to be more hurdles, but they're just talking about like, yeah, come over for dinner. There's like a whole bunch of people who are very powerful, who think you're dead and could still very much kill you. And that's another, they're just like, someone's going to clean this shit up, and they all just take off.
Maybe the American embassy will step in effectively at this particular point and keep them safe.
Maybe. But I mean, they also have to think, like, they, I guess, rigged his car to blow up. So it's just like, someone was going to show up there. But, like, they're not finishing that movie, clearly.
Also, I couldn't tell when she was in the elevator shaft, Billy. And she started seeing like the face, you know, through the trash bag and everything.
Yeah.
Did she see two faces or did she see it from different angles at different times? I couldn't tell if she was.
Maybe one of it was the mask.
Because they had multiple bags and obviously like some of them had like the bloody clothes in them. Some of them just had trash and everything.
I started wondering, maybe one of them had the mask. Yeah, it was just the mask. I don't know.
But I did wonder for a time, like, has this happened multiple times and they're just like dumping the trash out now? I couldn't tell. Again, so many questions. Yeah. So many questions with this movie.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it. That's
I don't know if
four
I really
star
have,
at least.
I don't
least.
Know if I have any questions. I just have fun.
American Werewolf in Paris.
Eli Roth mentioned this movie when he was doing press for Thanksgiving. And he had just cited it as like it was like an inspiration, or just like one of his favorite movies like growing up. And then he said that it was like an inspiration for Thanksgiving. And I saw that movie, and I mean we'll talk about that at some point. But there was nothing, because I was excited when he said that. I was just like, oh my God, they're like Mute Witness. Nothing in that movie I found like at any point was just like, where's the Mute Witness? So I don't know if maybe you have a different opinion on that.
I think I have an idea, but we'll, like you said, we'll cover that when we...
Well, I'm asking you right now. Don't skirt around it.
Well, I have to see the movie again just to kind of like specifically. But I mean, just in terms of like the layering, like yeah. I just remember as Thanksgiving was progressing, it kept ending too, you know? Like, here's one thing that you think is relief.
So that's the inspiration you're thinking of, not really anything stylistically.
Without going, I mean, you just ran this across me, my desk, right now. So, I mean, I have to go back and watch the movie and see it.
Heaven forbid I ask you to remember things that you see.
You know, I can't remember anything, particularly today. My memory, everybody who's listening is like, Eddie can't remember anything. I can't remember the right words. I can't remember anybody's name. I can't remember the lines they say. Like, obviously, my memory is not in great shape at this particular time.
And I always get shit for not remembering things, though.
So give me all the shit you need to feel better.
No, it's okay. I don't need to do that. Anyway, let's get to the cherry picker. It's not like they killed people. On purpose. All right, we need a cherry on top. I think this is, you know, probably we can agree. Billy.
Yeah, pretty cut and dry.
Yeah,
No, her sister deserves a shout out, but it's definitely Billy.
Yeah.
Like, she had to go through all of it.
Very, very resourceful, just in terms of, like, the limitations. A different kind of final girl. Like, how many mute final girls do we have? So, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Like, one to add to the list, but
and it's hard to be the one person who's seen something and believes that it happened, and you have to now convince everyone around you in various languages that it happened and to be disbelieved for as long as she was. Yeah. Absolutely. Even though it was all one night. But still, rough night.
So last week we asked you who deserves to die the most in Dawn of the Dead 2004. Right. I nominated Andre. Not to be confused with Andre Felix, former editor, who when I put that poll up, messaged me like, "What's this about?" So not you, Andre.
Not you, Andre.
Mekhi Phifer, Andre, versus Ty Burrell, Steve, in Dawn of the Dead, and across Patreon, Instagram, and YouTube. The final vote was 195 for Andre versus 502 for Steve. Ooh. Bollocks to that.
Well, let's hear what the people had to say. Maybe you have a vocal majority.
Would it be a vocal minority?
Or, well, maybe you have a vocal majority.
Majority?
Okay. Like, maybe you have a majority of the comments. I don't see words aren't working for me today.
It's okay. I'm sorry. Neon Plains, Andre, I can't wish death upon Phil. Is that the characters from Modern Family?
I've never seen an episode.
I've seen clips, but I'm just assuming because like that guy's from Modern Family. It must be Phil.
Yeah, so, Ty Burrell, and the orange juice commercials. That's all I know him from.
Oh, okay. I don't know that. I don't really watch commercials. I can't wish death upon Phil. Plus, Andre breaks the number one rule of every zombie movie: don't hide, bite, / hide the fact a loved one was bit.
Mm.
Very good point. TP Hoarder. Steve should have been at the door. None of the zombies would have gotten into the mall if he had done his job. I already forget. So, like, we're talking about you forgetting things. I already forgot so much about Dawn of the Dead. It gets really crazy frenetic towards the end there.
Right.
Sean Chalant. Oh, I love that. Sean Chalant. Steve.
You've read this name before.
But I never – I've read it before, but I've never – included. Sean Chalant.
I just hear you say it, so it's like, like nonchalant. Awesome. And then you just keep reading. Yeah.
But maybe I said like Sean Chalant.
No, I think you always said Sean Chalant.
Yeah. Watch like we go back. We've had this very conversation before. Steve, yeah, right. Because I never could get into Modern Family. Also, the song that plays during the montage is a lounge version of a Disturbed song by a guy named Richard Cheese. That's his whole shtick, covering famous songs as a Vegas lounge tune. Really enjoyed the movie this time around. Oh, I remember not being very fond of it when it came out. Thanks for an excuse to revisit it. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Kirsten rocks. Steve was just a shitty person. Andre had a breakdown over losing his wife and child. Okay.
Okay.
Did he I guess that's, murder anyone? That's Sarah Campbell. Andre gets my vote. Steve was an ass, but Andre was a loose cannon. I also am never a fan of the hide the bite characters in zombie movies. Thank you.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah.
Jeremy Huff. Steve was a dick, but Andre not only hid his wife's bite and the change that happened after. Rule number one in a zombie apocalypse. See everyone?
See, team Zach is vocal. Yeah.
Well, it's team kill Andre, not Felix. Jazzy Boo. I had to pick Andre because of the whole hiding the bite and baby thing. Like, come on, man. Amethyst Frost. Before I even saw the choices, I hoped somebody would nominate Andre, as he's the thing I remembered the most about the movie, and also the character right. who frustrated me the most thanks to that damn zombie baby. Mekhi Phifer really got dealt some shitty characters in horror movies between this, and I still know what you did last summer.
Enough said.
Nicholas Wetzel. Steve never really contributed much besides boat keys. He didn't really want to at first either. And pointing out celebrity lookalike zombies, RIP Burt Reynolds, Jay Leno, and Rosie O'Donnell. Plus Monica said he used all of the lemon stuff in the booze, so they had to use the vanilla stuff instead. Not cool.
I like the way you think. That is funny.
Silent Saturn, what? The Tar Man said, so I don't know. Sometimes these comments are not in order, so we'll be on the lookout for that. Maddie Ice, this one was hard, but when it comes to Steve, you knew he was an ass from the get-go. Not only that it was on them for leaving him to keep that door open. Andre, though, was going crazy and delusional, which made him dangerous and volatile. We don't know how much worse it could have gotten if Norma hadn't gone to check on him and Luda. So I have to go with Andre, even though he just wanted his family. RIP Norma, by the way. Thank you. No one has really, poor Norma. Poor Billy, poor Norma.
I said it a bunch.
Poor Norma. Poor Lori.
I love that.
Let another one get out. What scared another one away. Who's the actress who plays Norma?
Just next.
Which actress?
What? The one who played Norma.
Wait, okay. Well, I was going to say, who is she?
She's a character actress. I can't remember her name right now because I can't remember anything.
Okay.
But she's been in like everything from like the Hairspray movie musical to like the TV movie about Judy Garland's life that Judy Davis and Tammy Blanchard won Emmys for. Like okay. She's all in everything. She's worked forever.
Got
she's
it.
Just great.
Got yeah. it. My chunky Jordy. Steve was an ass and the dog was called Chips.
We said that eventually.
We said skips. Is it
no, then we, then yeah. I got it right because I had yeah. it in my notes somewhere.
Yeah. Blue Box.
I remember that.
Blue Box is Andre. Apart from the obvious reasons, he was no fun at all. You guys should try the vanilla stuff. The lemon stuff is all gone. Steve likes to put it in his booze. Mendejito. I will never get over the fabulous old lady getting killed because of him. Andre every time. Kieran Lee Hamilton. I know most people will vote for Steve because he's a dick, but Andre actually killed another survivor and put the lives of everyone in the mall at risk. So for that reason, he gets my vote. Thomas Baker. Steve is a sleaze, but Andre was not right in the head during the third act. Michael Vasquez, Steve, and Little King. So this is the next Cherry Picker episode. When is it? Because I want to watch the movie before the pod. Well, it was last week.
Right.
It was last week. All right. You get first dibs.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to have to help me with the name. It's not... Okay, because there's creepy camera guy, but there's also the creepy killer guy. The one who's like doing the humping and pumping and then the stabby wabbies.
Right.
And he's the one who gets electrocuted in the tub. That guy. Right. Whatever his name is.
Arcady.
Because that guy... Okay, that guy. Arcady? Okay.
Arcady?
Like Arcadia without the ya at the end. Okay. I'll just... Arcady. It'll be written, folks.
Yeah.
That guy. I'm never going to remember it. I'm not going to try. Yeah. So this guy... No, just because he's the one who commits the murder. He's the one who put the fear in the eyes of that poor woman, like while she was going to go. And, you know, oftentimes I'll say, like, the people who open the door for people like that sometimes are, like, even worse. But the fact that this guy, I don't know, I can't even call him, like, a shark or any kind of, like, predator like that, because he's worse than a shark. Like, he's a fiend. He's the worst of humanity. There's no room for even for me to feel anything but just absolute disgust and rage at his existence. That's the thing. You know, the thing that gets me usually is if I see someone, I kind of go like, "You're what's wrong with the world." He does that for me in this movie. So kill him. And it was so gratifying to see him die. Kill him again. That's what I say. How about you, Zach Cherry?
Well, I'm going to use some Edward Is Truth logic for my nomination in that case. First of all, I'm going to ask you to vote against Edward because he forgot the cardinal sin that Arcady committed, which was killing that dog. So for that, you know...
He did kill the dog.
He did.
And then he killed the custodian.
But you,
right
but you, did, but like you already such... forgot to mention it.
Oh, Jesus.
But no, I'm gonna use your way of thinking. Vote for Lyosha because he seemed to be the one that was in control. All the decisions were made by him. He was the one running the show. He told what's his face to do everything. So for that, he's the mastermind. Kill him. Oh, I was like really serious.
He couldn't
about
have done
that.
Anything kill without him. My guy. He couldn't have done any of that without my guy, though. So,
my know, guy. I love how you're just like ownership.
Cut off the arms.
Ownership is just like I've got Arcady. He's my guy. So there you go, Lyosha. I hopefully I'm saying this right. Or Arcady, for your heart, for your conscience. And you can vote over on Patreon if you are supporting us again. We thank you very much. There's an extra opportunity. You can head over there and cast that extra vote and get early access to future episodes, back catalog of all our Cherry Picker After Darks. You can head over and vote on Instagram at the Cherry Picker Pod. So follow us there. And you can also vote on YouTube. Over in the community section, you can subscribe to us there. And if you are new to the Cherry Picker and you're watching us on YouTube, you can go follow the link thingy. What is it? The RSS feed thingy in the description down below.
Yeah,
and you can listen to us if that's better because you're tired of seeing our faces. Or vice versa. If you're listening, go head over there. But subscribe.
If you just can't fight the curiosity, my God, what do they look like? Yeah, go to YouTube and you can see.
We're matching-ish again.
Charcoal gray. It's charcoal gray.
This is more like navy, but the
oh,
camera
is it? It looks like gray to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got like a kind of more royal blue going on underneath my charcoal.
Well, maybe it's like a bluish gray. You know, like sometimes, you know, grays have hues of blue in them.
Yeah, I'm like the two paints that you have to mix together in order to get Zach's color shirt. That's what's going on.
Okay. Where can they find you on social media, Mr. Paint Mixer?
You can find me mixing my paints on my Instagram and my Letterboxd and my YouTube and my TikTok. All Edward Is Truth, all one word, all traditional spelling. Just look.
I mean, as long as you're not mixing only... primary reds yellows and blues, like what's his fuck.
You will forever be making that reference.
I know.
The leprechaun painters are the
three
bane
three men who paint.
Or three guys? Is it three guys?
I don't. Maybe it's guys. Know. I don't. It's like three children.
We won't remember because that's the theme of today's
the kid. The kid was probably more mature than any of the other adults that were with them.
Oh, he was like a little old man. He was like a
Little old man. And then and then there was the guy who had the mental deficiency, and then there was the guy who was just, you know, wanted to get it on with Jay Aniston.
and insult her vegetarianism or whatever.
I don't know what. Yeah, she had a thing. But yeah, you can find me at Retro Bitch Face on Instagram, Zach Cherry 8 on Twitter, Zach Cherry on Letterboxd, or Zach Cherry, my main YouTube channel. And what's going on next week? Or not next week, because next week is the Cherry Picker After Dark. That's the Survivor Final Girls 2. And then after that, we're taking a week off. But in May, what is the first episode of May?
I literally have to look it up because I wrote it down. I typed it in and I don't remember already.
Well,
that's how bad it is, folks.
There's a new movie coming out. And we covered the first
one. It's that one where... Those people who you don't know do that thing.
Are they strange?
And they're not during the day. They're not victims, they're predators, and prey. So they prey.
Are they predators prey that prey, or they're like praying to God?
Yeah, I know, right? It's a P-R-E-Y.
We only pray at night, you know.
I wonder if there's a movie, Strangers, P-R-A-Y, at night. Very different movie.
Well, there you go.
Strangers, pray at night.
Strangers, pray at night. That's going to be our next regular episode. But we thank you for watching and for listening. And we will be right back.